Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Hey, guys.
How are you? Hello. Happy drop day.
Happy Tuesday or day that ends in Y that you are listening to this.
Ooh, atta girl. That's good.
Cover all the bases.
I have something very exciting for news today.
Yes.
And you all will definitely remember, because you've been with us for so long, that at the beginning of this year, 9 months ago, I set a goal to read 10 books. And I have finished that goal 10 weeks early.
You scared me for a second. Boom. You said 9 months. I was like, what? Only one thing I know of happened in 9 months.
That'd be quite hard for me to do on accident. No.
How many books?
10.
10. All right. There you go.
I finished 10 last week. I'm on 11. Like, I'm in the middle of 11.
Hell yeah.
And who is she? Actually, she's just a girl who discovered audiobooks, but I'm very pleased about it. It's fun.
I love that. What have been your favorite? Well, okay, give me your favorite.
My
of the 10.
Favorite,
your favorite.
Of the 10. Okay. I have two favorites in different categories.
Okay.
In terms of like all over enjoyment, like I enjoyed this book the most. Mm-hmm. Definitely would be I Kissed Shara Wheeler or Shara Wheeler by Casey McQuiston.
Oh yeah, you've talked about this one.
Highly recommend anything Casey McQuiston. Normally she does like little playlists for her characters on Spotify, and I think it's so cute and so immersive. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's just really heartwarming to see like YA romance for queer people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all. Like, it's just sweet, but it's fluffy, but it's mm-hmm. very sweet, and it's well written. Like, it's a fun story. But I think in terms of like my favorite one, All Good People Here by Ashley Flowers, phenomenal. That okay. one is like, again, it's from the host or one of the hosts of Crime Junkie.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a great not true crime, but it's like a great crime thriller book. Also, she is coming out with a new one. I have it pre-ordered, but I haven't read it yet. It's not out.
Ooh.
And I think the other one that I really liked that I am going to plug here slightly is called Daisy Darker, and it is by Alice Feeney.
This I love Alice Feeney books.
Was such a good book.
What's it called? It's what darker?
Daisy Darker.
Daisy. Okay, I do not. I have not seen that one, but on my my Amazon, I like keep adding books and saving mm-hmm. them for later and everything. Just like, I'm going to get you.
One day. Cannot recommend this book enough. Fabulous. Wonderful. So we're going to hop right in.
Yay.
Hi. Hello. Welcome or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime.
You guys.
Oh, today I have a very timely case for us. Since we are on break right now, you don't know that, but we know that. One of our hosts has recently gotten married.
Oh, it's not so me. Weird. It's so weird to say that.
It's not me. Allie. It's Allie. Allie got married. Yay!
Yay!
Except that was way better than what we're about to talk about.
Yay!
Yay! Yeah, you know, actually, yeah, fuck it. We're going to celebrate that.
Woo!
So, of course, always at the top, we list all of our sources and trigger warnings. For trigger warnings here, I am just going to say, like, depending on who you are and who you were raised, we're talking about, like, a lot of religious context today. We are also talking about, like, potential domestic violence, but it does not get, it's not descriptive in any way. I think it's possible, but it's not really explicitly included.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, of course, we're talking about murder. You know,
you like put on a true crime podcast. You know that. Babe.
But we always list our sources from the top. So today I took a lot from NBC, CNN, The Times, and I took quite a bit from an episode of Truly Criminal that, I mean, I saw it on YouTube, but you can see them all over the place from this case. Obviously, there's more. They're always linked below, babe, every single time. If you ever wanted to read through them, know what we know and see how we got here. So, also, as an upfront warning, just like from the top, I am going to talk quite a bit today about religion and some components of this as like a culture. I grew up in a church, and I promise I'm not counting anyone out. This is never intended to be included as a way to judge, to be exclusionary, or in any other context. This is literally just to give you some information on the culture and why I think we might have ended up where we did today.
Okay.
So just so we know from the top, I like to put that out there because we always promise this is one place you can go where we're never going to push shit on you and you can get an actual escape from some of the hellism of what's everywhere on the internet and just find the hellism of what you want to find, which is apparently true crime with us.
So, welcome to the table. We've been waiting for you.
There are plenty of open seats. So today's case does feel appropriately themed, yes, but not appropriately matched. Before we get into it, though, I want to talk to you about something cinematic, dramatic, right out of a freaking storybook, okay?
Okay.
And I am, as you all likely could have guessed, an avid mystery, thriller, psychological suspense, borderline horror, true crime, murder, mystery kind of galley, okay?
Retweet.
This means I've long had a deep love of Sherlock Holmes, Hercule Poirot, and Nancy Drew in my history and many bookshelves. I've heard stories, seen movies, read books, and listened to audiobooks about the various ways that these sort of whodunit mysteries work. And the murders are always quite complex, like secretly poisoning perfume or sugar before giving someone tea, giving someone a poisonous plant or baking them a pie with a berry that only kills you if you eat just that amount somehow. But there are also cinematic deaths in these kinds of stories that aren't quite as complex, but they are equally unlikely. The more dramatic ones.
Mm.
In the words of an SNL skit, cool guys don't look at explosions. So like blowing someone up and walking away. That's not really real life, you know? I would say anything in any of the John Wick movies. I love them. I will cherish them forever. Highly unlikely. There's also things that are a little more visually cinematic, like The Matrix and like dodging the bullets and the pills and all that shit.
Leave Keanu alone.
I love Keanu. I lived in a home where we had a giant poster of Keanu for a long time. This is not about him. It's never about him.
I love him.
He is perfect. But that being said, there are also these giant deaths, like pushing people off of cliffs and them like raising their hand like, no.
Simba.
As they're falling. Yeah, exactly. Like, there's all of these cinematic ways, and I often think, perhaps too naively, that these are the result of people having way too much time on their hand to think and picture, like, the most dramatic death scene they can possibly find.
Right.
Right? But not here. Cody Johnson was found at the bottom of Glacier National Park in West Glacier, Montana on July 11th, 2014. Cody was found dead at the bottom of a 300-foot cliff near a waterfall. He was half in and half out of a body of water that came, like, right off the waterfall. It was, like, downstream. By the looks of him, you would have thought it was, like, a hazing prank gone wrong. There was no indication of who he was, that he was married, or, you know, a wallet or anything. It was just him, his blue sweatshirt, and like a small piece of black fabric that was kind of like long and thin, like maybe a tie or something nearby.
300 feet. Wow.
But instead of a frat or an enemy or even a family feud, the police had more pressing questions for one woman in particular. Cody's newlywed widow, who he got married to just 8 days prior.
8 days?
Days.
Shit.
Now look, I know it's a wild time to jump back, but we're jumping back in time, okay? We are in 2014 Montana when Cody is found, but we are getting in that time machine. We're pulling a Squidward, going past, and we have found ourselves in 2011 Montana.
Okay.
Cody Johnson was 24, and he was a good man. He had grown up, initially born in like San Jose, California,
mm-hmm.
but his parents got divorced. And when his mom decided she was leaving California, he was with her. So Sherry and Cody took off and they moved to Montana to start a little life there.
I would love to visit Montana. It just looks so beautiful.
It does. Like, freaking beautiful. And this case has been awful. But like looking through the research and just the photos of Montana, I'm like, oh, I got an itch. Like, I got to hop on a plane.
I think we're going to go there.
Shit. That being said, Cody was a great friend and a loving guy. He would happily take on the role of class clown just to make someone smile in school and beyond. Somewhere in his childhood, he found a love for all things outdoor. Cody loved fishing and hunting and loving every day. And by that, I mean fishing and shooting and hiking.
Yes.
Cody also really loved cars. He would build them up. He'd race them with friends. He'd just tinker around, see what he could do. The whole nine. And it was really because of that, that in 2011, Cody had a job creating custom-built vehicles, and he fucking loved it.
Good for him.
Not only was he doing something he loved, but we all know that, like, also, who you work with makes the job, right? Like, he could have the world's best job, and his boss could be the world's biggest asshole, and he'd hate it. But not Cody, because Cody's boss was even like a close friend, Cameron. So Cody gets to get up every day, go do something he loves that's like kind of a creative pursuit of what he loves with friends. He's living the dream. He's also in Montana, which is like perfect for all of his other hobbies.
Oh, yeah. He definitely ended up in the right spot.
Yes. And despite the fact that Montana is a phenomenal playground for an outdoorsy guy who had his mom and good friends with him, Cody wanted more. He wasn't a lone wolf, but actually craved a partner. He wanted a partner and one that he could settle down with and have a family. Cody felt like he had everything else he could possibly want. A great place to live that meant he could do all of his hobbies that he loved, good friends, a good family, a job that he loved, but he just needed one more missing piece.
Aww.
Enter Jordan Graham, a local 21-year-old that he hit it off with fast.
Mm-hmm.
A mutual friend had introduced them, and while Jordan was shy and introverted, sometimes even being described as like standoffish,
mm-hmm.
all of that faded away when you got to know her. Like when she got comfortable, she came out of that shell.
Okay.
I think everyone is a little more guarded with strangers than friends, but Jordan took this almost to the extreme, even if unintentionally. I mean, she was kind of hard to get to know, but once she was comfortable around you, she'd open up and was a freaking delight. This is the Jordan that Cody got to know. And considering they had the same sense of humor, the same passions, they loved the outdoors, she loved adventure and traveling, it's no wonder he fell so fast.
Oh, yeah. They can do it all together.
I mean, they both did, I think. They spent a lot of time hiking together, and they seemed like a great pair.
Hmm.
They hiked all over the state. Montana has huge amounts of nature and incredible views. Tourists come from all over to see the national parks, the mountains, the lakes, and the plains. And even though it's one of the biggest landlocked states in the U.S., meaning it doesn't touch a major body of water, the land is exactly what draws the people out there. I mean, hell, I came to the Northeast and I thought it was for the ocean. But if you ask me today, it's the mountains. I can deal with a lake as long as it's a relatively big lake and there's a mountain nearby.
Mm-hmm.
I can't live without the mountains or the forests, but that's beside the point. One of the major national parks in Montana that drew in tons of tourism, and Cody and Jordan frequently, was Gateway Glacier National Park, which contained over 700 miles of trails, woods, and wildlife.
Oh, I just want to go.
It's beautiful. Oh my gosh. Just looking at this place to get context for this case, I'm drooling.
Mm-hmm.
It's a postcard. It's all a postcard. That's what Alaska was like, too.
I know, and we're going to go there, too.
Anyway, it felt like destiny. These two were a pair on many levels, including their goals and their shared love of God and family. Jordan wanted a family of her own and craved to be a stay-at-home mom. She was a professional babysitter, meaning like her daytime job was a very consistent, like it might have even been a nannying type of job, but she just consistently was a caretaker for kids. She loved kids and would babysit whenever she could, whether it was at work or family or even people from her church community's kids. Cody, who wanted a family of his own, thought that this was perfect.
Sounds perfect. I mean, I know we're talking about it here, so obviously it cannot be, but sounds very sweet.
It does. And while they didn't meet at church, I mean, Cody quickly turned to religion after meeting Jordan, and he started going to church with her often. Jordan came from a household that was very religious and very strict to the rules of their spirituality. Jordan was raised as a Baptist and regularly attended Faith Baptist Church. And now, I was raised in a Christian church and can attest that there are many moral maxims that the Bible asks you to live up to. As a ridiculously large overview, as I am not a theologist, there are so many rules that God lays out in the Old Testament. In fact, there are so many that us humans cannot possibly live up to these, which is a part of what constituted God sending his only son to forgive us of the ways that we sin and we don't live up to these expectations, which is what led to what we now know as the New Testament. This shows God's everlasting love and dedication to his creation, us. Now, regardless of what you believe, and I'm not here to talk about my beliefs, but just to add some context here as to the views and background, I know that Baptist churches have a reputation for being a little more extreme with some of the Old Testament rules as well. Old Testament rules can kind of vastly differ in what they may be. So yes, there are the ones that you think of, right? Like, don't covet, don't have sex before you're married, all sorts of things. But there's also other ones in there that are like, don't wear mixed fabrics. You can only eat fish on Fridays during Lent. Like, there's a lot of very small ones that are part of why it's so unachievable to live up to, at least in the way it was explained to me as a kid. So Jordan's family, being very strict in this, took all of these very seriously. And Jordan and her family followed the church's views closely. And one that was a really big one in this culture was no sex before marriage. She was planning to save herself for marriage, which is a great plan for people who deeply resonate and follow the church. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Or just a personal preference, I think. I mean, not that I think that that's as common, but I think some people are just like, yeah, I'm not doing that till
And I get it. Things are done. I think that that is awesome if that's what you want to pursue. Culturally, and as a raised Jesus freak, I like to laugh about some of the memes. Okay. I love a Christian girl Pinterest fall. I love the infinity scarves and the brown riding boots, all of it. I love the Bible art that girlies will post with the watercolors over their favorite verses. I mean, hell, in high school, I almost wanted to get some part of Micah 7:19 ESV version, thank you, tattooed on me somewhere. So I get it. Like, I understand. But one of the things that does make me giggle just a lot is the stereotypical, like, religious relationships. There's like little memes and jokes of like, the Lord is leading me to Judah, and I just want us all to pray that the Holy Spirit moves in him and has him ask me out. Yeah. Like, it's very sweet. It's very funny. It makes me giggle. And I'm sure that people really do feel this. But also, being raised in the church means I was also raised with like all of the other 12-year-olds experiencing crushes for the first time. And so it's just kind of nostalgic.
Aww.
But, I mean, seriously, who wouldn't want divine-led love? Like, there's, you know, no judgment here. I think it's very sweet.
Yeah.
But it does make me giggle. And as a person who's aged and matured and gotten a little bit of unfortunate dating behind me, I think I can say that there are an overwhelming amount of people who don't let hormones blind them. They take their time and have wonderful faith-driven marriages that last a really long time. There are also some people who get married and haven't done that work and maybe mistake some raging hormones for the stirring of the Holy Spirit every now and then.
Yeah.
Anyways, that little culture tidbit aside, all of that to say was that Jordan and Cody both held a love of Christ and made room in their relationship for that part of their lives as well. Things were going well, and after about a year of dating, the two got engaged on Christmas of 2012. Jordan, of course, said yes, and I mean, she was with the man that she wanted to create a family with and have a life with.
Yeah.
I mean, how could you not? He was so sweet. He's so funny. Like, he's all of these things. He's a provider. He has a great work ethic. Like, everybody who knew him said he had the hardest work ethic of anyone they knew. And all he wanted was to make her happy.
It's very sweet.
Actually, it's very cute. One of his friends said that he texted him and he's like, listen, as long as I get to wake up in the same house as her every single day, like, I can die a happy man. Like, I'm happy. So it might not surprise you then that the engagement was short. Only 6 months of planning, the two officially got married in a beautiful outdoor ceremony on June 29th, 2013.
Okay.
The wedding was full of character and felt so uniquely them, outdoors included. God is the foundation for their wedding, and I am sure, just as a raised church girly, that yes, the verse that a cord of three strands isn't easily broken was probably put in that ceremony. But I love it.
Most likely.
The two even wrote their own song for their first dance called You're Mine.
Oh no.
People wrote beautiful speeches about the couple and their love. Cody was beaming and Jordan was making funny faces with him. And she seemed so happy she was crying half the night. In fact, actually, now that I mention it, I think Jordan surprised Cody with the song for their first dance. Mm-hmm. I think he knew that it wasn't going to be a song he knew, but she went to like an organization or a company that used to specialize in helping couples do that.
Oh, that's sweet.
It is. And it was a very sweet song with lyrics like, everyone wants a safe place to fall and you're mine. You help me to climb higher for a better view. You're my safe place to fall. You never let me go.
Okay, now I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Can you repeat what you started with?
Everyone wants a safe place.
No. I mean, when you started this episode, we started with a 300-foot fall to your death.
Yeah. Well, that's not a safe place to fall.
Prosecution rests. The state rests.
Thank you. That was today's episode. No, I'm kidding. It was a ceremony for the freaking books. Okay, what a party.
Your Honor, give her the chair.
And Jordan wasn't the only one planning surprises. Okay.
Ruh-roh.
Cody even wanted to make sure there were like fresh flowers left for Jordan in the hotel room that night. Cody went so far as to make sure that one of the bridesmaids could sneak out during the reception to go put the fresh flowers in their hotel room. And I just think that's so sweet. Like, you really wanted it to be special for her.
That is very sweet. Although, could you imagine being the bridesmaid that's like, oh, shit.
Yep. You're like, I have to put down my Prosecco to go to freaking Aldi.
Put sneakers on.
Yeah. Let me go grab a bunch of flowers and then I'll put them in a vase next to the bed. And then I'll come back and party more.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm kidding. It was very sweet. The two were practical in the way that they opted to buy and make a home instead of go on a honeymoon and returned to their first home in Kalispell, Montana. They took a week off to make it feel like home and help do it up. They just really wanted to spend time together as a married couple and spend more time with friends and family. Jordan had her regular babysitting job, and Cody would return to work building his custom cars on July 8th.
I feel like he was probably very successful in that. Like,
mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about cars, and I have a lot of respect for people who do because I rely on them so heavily.
Yeah, right.
That, like, I'm so thrilled that humans can do that, and I think it's really cool when you get how it works because it just...
Help me.
The synapses just don't fire for me. So I imagine that he probably, like, can provide pretty well, especially if he's, like, one of the few in the area that's able to do what he does.
Right, and it's not, like, normal car repair work, which is also needed on its own and can be very successful. But this is, like, custom car building, which in my brain comes with a clientele that can afford custom car building.
Of course. And I'm sure that, like, you know, I mean, it's probably hard to find people who are skilled that that's able to do what he can do. And he's very young and he's successful. And, like, he sounds like an all around great kid who had, mm-hmm. and I'm saying kid, he's 24, but, you know, who had friends and family and love for his girl and wants to have children. And, like, I think a lot of guys, at least maybe now, we're fast forwarding, you know, 10 years, but at 24, they're like, no.
Yeah.
Like, that is not at all appealing. That's for later. Like, I'm trying to party and have fun and do whatever and, hey, live your life. But
right,
I can appreciate somebody who's almost like an old soul where they're looking forward to having those things and finding meaning in that and willing to put in the work to get there. And I think that's special. And if he felt like he found that in her,
right,
and she loves and dotes on him as much as, you know, he dotes on her, then I think that that's really sweet. I just know that they were married 8 days before one of them is dead. So that,
yeah,
that's, I don't like that.
I mean, they definitely don't have a long time as a married couple to build that foundation.
Not even barely a week.
Yep. Because on July 8th, when Cody was supposed to return to work, his friend and boss, Cameron, was immediately concerned when time passed and Cody wasn't there. Cody was known as a guy with one of the best work ethics you could find, yes. But part of that also meant that Cody was always punctual. If he was going to be somewhere at a time, he was there 5 minutes early.
Bless him.
Latest.
Bless him.
So it didn't even take a few hours for Cameron to just go straight to Cody's house.
And he they're close, like, they're friends too, right? It's not odd for that to happen.
And it's like, okay, you don't show up. It's after your wedding. Maybe you're going to be a little late one day. All right, we're at 20 minutes. Where the hell is my guy? Because this isn't like it.
This has never happened before. Yeah.
Right. I'm going to give him a call. I get no answer. I'm going there.
Yeah.
So Cameron does. Cameron went to the pair's home, and when nobody answered, he panicked, and he did force his way into the home. Like, he was panicked. There was nobody there, and there was no sign of a break-in besides his or signs of any unusual fights. Nothing seemed like it was missing. Nothing was broken. And Cameron was getting more and more concerned. He went to the garage to see maybe if Cody was there. Like, maybe he lost track of time working on his own car.
Mm-hmm.
But he found Cody's car, just not Cody. But he also found Cody's cell phone.
Oh, that's eerie.
Which, yes, this was 10 years ago. But even 10 years ago, he was not without a cell phone.
Yeah.
He always had it on him. Cameron filed a missing persons report promptly. So the police get on this fast. And luckily for us, that means police talk to Jordan fast. And, you know, obviously a few other people. But they found out the following gist of Cody and his 24 hours prior to being missing. So here's what Jordan, with the help of, like, a few other friends and family members, came up with.
Okay.
Sunday, July 7th, 2014, Cody had seemingly made plans with his father-in-law, Stephen, to go kayaking that day. But he later canceled because he said Jordan had a surprise for him.
Okay.
Another friend said that he called off a game of golf for the same reason. And instead, on that day, Cody and Jordan went to an afternoon church service before going to the lake to hang out. After they hung out at the lake for a while, they went back to church and then had a late dinner at Dairy Queen with some of their friends before leaving.
That sounds so cute.
Friends say Cody was in really good spirits and he was actually joking around. He, like, poked the lenses out of, like, 3D movie glasses and was goofing around and, like, trying them on and doing little voices or whatever. But Jordan told the police that on the way back from their late Dairy Queen dinner, Cody took a call, and she didn't know with who, but it was almost a half an hour on the phone call, and he seemed kind of agitated. When they returned, Jordan said that her phone was going to die, and she left her charger at work, so she dropped Cody off at home and left to go grab her charger and come right back. She also said that later, she got a text from Cody saying he was going to go take a drive with someone, And when she got back, she saw him pulling out in a dark colored car with Washington plates. She said it wasn't super weird. Like, she didn't know who this was. But because of his love of building cars and racing cars, he would often sort of go off with friends that she didn't know in cars that she wasn't familiar with.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because it's not like they're all driving the same thing over and over again. This is like their thing.
Yeah, they have access to that. They can just build it and change it themselves.
Right. And she said when it was racing, sometimes they would start or go late into the evening. So that didn't really strike her as odd.
Mm-hmm.
And she said she woke up and she was concerned when he wasn't there, but she didn't want to report him missing in case he came back and got angry and got mad at her for overreacting, basically.
Okay.
Outside of the police, Cody's friends were also quickly rallying, and they wanted to get into his social media to see what they could find. I'm not sure that they ever did this. I just know this was something that they wanted to do. Like, they were trying, you know? Authorities obtained his call logs and saw a Washington number did actually make a call right around what Jordan's timeline was. So they get super excited. They're like, okay, so you see him driving off with like a Washington plate. We see the Washington call. Like, let's track that down. And they call up the number, and the man was named Jose. And Jose said they talked about tools that he had borrowed from Cody, but it was nothing out of the ordinary, and Cody didn't seem pissed at all. So he wasn't sure where she got agitated from, but
okay,
whatever. And Jose, I don't know what it was, but he actually did have a very solid alibi for the night of Cody's disappearance.
They ruled him out.
And yep. He was ruled out. Yep. Time is passing, and not a ton, but some of the important time, you know?
Oh, of that first 48, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And police are back to square one, knowing no more about where Cody could be or who he left with. But on July 10th, Jordan came back to the police with a terrifying update. She came to share an email that she received earlier that day from an email with the following name. Carman Tony 607. Not confirmed, but yeah, probably like a Gmail, you know?
Carman Tony.
Carman Tony.
And I think his name's Tony.
I would think, but it could actually be man or car. Is this a Transformers movie?
That's a good Shia LaBeouf. What are you doing, bud?
But the email said something along the following lines. That Cody had gone for a ride with car buddies, and he had taken a hike with them when they stopped. But he had fallen and died.
Oh.
Jordan, when talking with the police, gave them like four different parks or hike trails that she knew Cody liked and frequented, but didn't have any other idea what could be going on. The police are, of course, concerned and asking questions. But Jordan says, actually, yeah, I do know a Tony. I've never gotten an email from Carman Tony before, but Cody works with a guy named Tony S. at the car shop.
Okay.
So, of course, police go to investigate this new development. And Tony was a nice guy. He talked with the police, but he hadn't seen or talked to Cody in a while, and he had never had an association with an email or user with Carman Tony.
And did not have a reason to send an email to Jordan?
No.
Okay.
He did, though, let the police go through his phone and his computer, where they found nothing.
Okay.
But this gave the police a great idea. And by that, I mean they probably already had it, but they finally got permission to get the warrant. And they got a warrant to go through email as well as Jordan and Cody's phones.
Because they have his phone, so
right,
be pretty easy.
While the police had their investigation, it's no surprise that a newlywed widow is pursuing an investigation of her own. She rallied friends and family and tried to go look in some of the locations she thought Cody might have been. But specifically, she started with Glacier National Park, where her and Cody went often. The only issue was, as discussed earlier, this park has over 700 miles of trails.
Yeah.
Even if they got 70 people out there, which seems like a lot to me, that means each of them would have had to search 100 miles of their own.
Mm-mm.
So this could take forever. But Jordan and her army looked in every nook and cranny they could, leaving no stone unturned in that park the first day, only to find no signs of Cody for wherever they decided to start. Of course, they aren't done after a day. They didn't probably have 70 people split up each searching their own 100 miles. But if that's the visual I'm giving you, you know that it is not going to be over in one day.
Yes.
The next day they went back, but something was different. This day, Jordan was on a mission. And Blues Brothers reference included, she was on a mission from God. This park is so large, but instead of picking up where they left off, Jordan was driving with a purpose. She had a specific spot in mind, and I believe it was called the Loop Trail. She followed narrow roads, drove past turns and new spots, but she felt that the Holy Spirit was leading her to a trail that Cody had once said he wanted to see before he died. And
that's, come on.
Yeah.
Girl on the nose.
I wrote in my notes, I said, girl, the Holy Spirit is what moves in you when you hear Oceans by Hillsong, not when you have a hunch where your dead husband might be.
Yeah.
But anywho.
Ma'am.
They went to the Loop Trail, and it was beautiful. Yes, but it was high. There was a safety wall for hikers, but just a few feet outside of it, there was a steep drop past sharp rocks and trees and something like a 300-foot decline.
Hmm.
Jordan, recklessly searching, hopped over the safety wall to peer over the edge. She looked over and yelled that she could see someone in the water at the bottom, and then repeatedly shouted to everyone there that she just knew it was Cody.
Yeah, how?
The group told the rangers, but because it had been a long day of searching and it was night, the rangers wouldn't traverse the dangerous cliff until morning.
Okay.
The next day, July 12th at 8 a.m., the search for Cody Johnson ended when they tragically found his remains at the bottom of this mountain. On the way down the cliff, which, by the way, I picture the rangers using those like ugly harnesses and ropes with carabiners and someone at the bottom saying, belay on, and they're like falling, and they're like fall on, you know, and like sticking their little butts out and walking down.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, on the way down, they found a blue sweatshirt that belonged to Cody. And once they hit the ground, they found Cody's body in shallow water downstream from a nearby waterfall. Cody wasn't wearing his wedding ring and had a small piece of skinny, long black cloth nearby that could have been like a tie or a blindfold or like a ribbon, I think.
It's very odd.
But this really confused police because the thing is, Cody allegedly left at night with those friends. So there's no reason for him to go racing and then decide to hike up at night. Plus, to get to the ledge, you have to be able to climb over the little wall, right? Like the safety wall.
Right.
And it's a 300-foot drop down. But Cody was afraid of heights. And as a woodsy man, he literally never went off the trail, much less ignore safety precautions to look at a 300-foot drop off a cliff at night.
I wouldn't.
He would even take a lower level tourist route for some of these trails if they were options. And one of his friends recounted a time where Cody wanted to change a light bulb for his mom, like the friend's mom,
mm-hmm.
except he would have had to get on a really tall ladder to do it, and he couldn't do it. Like, he couldn't get himself up there.
So it doesn't seem like he would jump over this little wall here.
Right. If that ladder to change a light bulb safely on ground was too high for comfort, what makes you think after a night hanging out with friends and then deciding to hike at night would be the time that he decides to do this?
Also, you know? Where are these friends? Ask them.
Yeah, right? The idea that Cody would decide to be brave, to take the higher route that he'd never been on in the dark, late at night, and then still decide to disregard a safety precaution just didn't make sense. The next day, Jordan posted a picture from their wedding on Facebook, which said the following. Miss you so much, Cody. Not a day will go by where I don't think about you. You will live in my heart forever. I know you're in a better place now looking down on me. You're my angel. Love you with all my heart and soul. See you again one day.
That's no.
Yeah.
Where's the rest of it?
No, it's all there. And you couldn't hear it, but there were exclamation points at the end of all of those.
That's worse, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is a wildly positive take for a woman newlywed and newly widowed.
It sounds like somewhat like a friend who's visited for a week and now has to go home. It's like, I love you. I'll see you soon.
I'll think about you.
I'll be thinking about you.
Bye,
but have fun. I know, like, you're thinking of me. Yep. Bye. That just sounds, I mean, as awful as it is, like, you, we always say that the reaction that somebody has is not for us to decide.
Right.
But there is a level of, like, shock that maybe you'd expect, or, mm-hmm. like, if you're going to make a post at all, it just, it sounds so almost friendly.
Yeah.
And, like,
upbeat.
Flippant. Like, just so, like, eh.
Yeah. Love what? You.
Like, someone who visited for a weekend and now has to leave again for another year or something. Right. It's like, well, we'll see you.
Oh, bye. You. Yeah. And so 2 weeks go by and the police are still investigating. And during that time, Cody's services were had and his funeral was held. Here at ATFTC, as you just heard Allie say, we believe that how someone responds to grief is never the full story when it comes to culpability or guilt or murder. But it did strike a lot of people as odd and uncomfortable that Jordan sat through almost the entire funeral on her phone.
Bitch.
And she probably dissociated because homegirl was showing zero emotion. Her friends were like, yeah, we'd see her like individually and it was like nothing was different. She was like, hey, what's up?
Oh, see, yeah, there's so many different ways to perceive that because it's like she could have been like, sometimes what happens is people are so emotional and so mm-hmm. distraught and beside themselves that like, they literally need medication to just get through the day where it really like evens them out and almost makes them have like a flat affect.
Yeah.
Which can then be looked at as like, well, you don't care. And it's like, no, I care so much. I quite literally yes. couldn't be here.
This is a medically induced flat affect.
Correct. That yeah. like might explain why there's no big show of emotion, but does not explain the like happy, cheery.
Right.
Like, hey, what are we doing later? Are we going bowling?
Yeah.
Kind of attitude, which seems
And I kind of odd. Feel the same about, like, at the funeral, not having emotion or being on your phone, like, being so dissociated, like, having to check out from that.
Yeah.
That being said, I mean, most
There's
of us...
There's a time and a place, though, in that. Yeah. But the services for your husband.
Yep.
That has just tragically died in his 20s.
Is probably not the time to play Candy Crush level 203.
No.
Probably. But if you thought that was weird, you're not alone. Because her best friend and maid of honor, Kimberly, also thought it was weird. And she thought it was too weird.
Hey, Kimmy.
After this, Kimberly walked herself right into the police department and started fucking talking.
Okay.
She has to talk to officers about some texts that she had. She recalled many conversations with Jordan in the prior few months where Jordan seemed way more excited about the wedding than the marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Like, planning a party is fun, but Jordan seemed afraid of the forever part that came after. Kimberly said that, bluntly, Cody was far more in love with Jordan than she ever was with him.
Then don't marry him.
Jordan apparently asked multiple people if they thought she was making the right decision. At different times, of course, but different occasions means many conversations about this.
Don't marry him then.
She was very nervous and often wondered if she made a mistake.
Don't marry him then.
The night after they got married, she texted Kimberly, I don't know if all of this was the right thing to do. So much happened last night. I just don't know.
You shouldn't have married him then.
And Kimberly said, last night at the wedding or at the room? And Jordan said, being married and after. And when Kimberly asked what happened, Jordan was like, no, I'd rather talk about it than text about it.
No, I'm just kidding.
But the texts continued with Jordan texting things like using the my period started spiel tonight. I freaking hope it works because if I'm forced to do something, I'm gonna freak out.
So she didn't want to talk, she didn't want to text about it, and then she continued to text about it, or is this different?
I think these are all, like, within different days, but okay. She did still continue to text about it.
Okay.
Like.
Yeah, I mean, and that, if that's being said because she felt pressured, I mean, obviously that's not okay, but.
Right. But here's the thing. I don't see any history that shows Cody to be a pushy guy or an obsessive guy or an angry guy or a controlling guy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not in their marriage. I wasn't for all 8 days. I did not.
Yep.
Neither participate. But I will say it gets weirder as Kimberly reads more texts.
Okay.
Because on July 7th, after they left their late Dairy Queen dinner, Jordan texted Kimberly saying she wanted to talk about Cody about how she was really feeling. Kimberly said she was sending positivity and prayers. Just before 9, Jordan said that, dead serious, if you don't hear from me again tonight, something happened.
Mm-hmm.
Later that night, Jordan showed up on Kimberly's doorstep and said it didn't go well. Cody got really angry and she left the house to go to her brother's. This, as well as the weird funeral, as well as her making that comment about Cody wanting to see the loop before he died, as well as her not reporting him missing, Kimberly just thought it was all too fucking weird and had a quote-unquote sickening feeling, but knew in her gut Jordan was somehow responsible for Cody's death. She just didn't know how or why.
I mean, good gut instincts and good on her for following them.
Yeah.
But pretty horrible to have to think that she was the maid of honor in her wedding.
Yeah.
Like, you just toasted them.
Yep.
And not even 2 weeks later, you're like, she did it.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain. Yeah, not even 2 weeks later, literally. So, I also just want to go back and say, when we're talking about the things that Jordan is afraid of or doesn't want to do, there's a lot of comments made in the articles I've read, that the documentaries that I watched, that this was specifically around sex.
Mm-hmm.
That was a very scary thing. And I think that's totally fair. It would be a first time. Like, that's something you've never experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of different cultural influences and like posts online that make it seem very different than it likely would be, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I can imagine being scared about that. But in the words of my very intelligent, hot, beautiful, smart co-host, then don't marry him. Okay. There's also this notion that if you're feeling this way, talk to him. The other person involved in this, he might like to know that.
Oh, you mean your other half now? You mean like the person that
you bound yourself to until death?
Yeah, the one you wrote a song for and and played it about falling? A little on the nose, no? I mean,
yeah,
ma'am, this sounds premeditated if you ask me.
Yeah. Who knows? But yeah. So, around the time that Kimberly went in to talk to the police also got the results from that, like, warrant, you know? They found out that the IP address from the Carman Tony email came back, and they showed that it was set up and used at the home of someone named Steve Rutledge. And you might be saying, who the fuck is Steve Rutledge? And I'm going to say, don't you remember earlier when Jordan's stepdad, Steve, said that Cody canceled a kayaking trip? Because it's Jordan's stepdad. Not that they weren't suspicious enough, since Jordan's stories would change from time to time. And then Kimberly had all of these texts. Also in the results of these tests on the phones was that Jordan and Cody weren't apart the night he died at all. In fact, the phone records showed them together at Glacier National Park at 9:17 p.m. Isn't that funny?
Jordan. Uh-oh.
Using this, they found CCTV footage which showed Cody's car and both of them inside. Jordan broke down and started telling the police that she started telling Cody how she felt, but it didn't go well. And he got upset, saying that if that's how she felt, they should annul the marriage. Jordan was worried about her reputation, having a divorce 8 days after the wedding. How and why, we don't know, but then they went off to the park and started walking on a trail.
Sounds to me like she believes in her mind that it is better to murder somebody than it is to simply annul a marriage that was not meant to be.
But in the words of Easy A, what will people say?
Then you shouldn't have married him then.
But what will people say?
No.
Anyway, sorry, just being obnoxious now. But how and why they started hiking, we don't know. Jordan at some point mentioned a blindfold and noted that they both went over a bridge and through the trail and then over that little safety wall that separated the trail from the ledge where they would then continue fighting. Jordan repeatedly told the police that she felt like maybe they should have waited a little longer and then gotten married. Here's what she said. I wasn't feeling like I was on cloud nine. She also said she didn't want to do that trail because she was afraid he could fall. And he said, I could do it with a blindfold on. And he just put it on. And he said, I could put it on. I'd take a step and I wouldn't even fall.
Or she's like, I have a surprise for you. It's just over that wall.
Yep. Jordan told the police that she kept thinking he was going to fall regardless. They kept arguing. And then he went to grab her arm or jacket. And she said, no. She said she wasn't going to let this happen. And she was going to defend herself. So she said, let go. And she pushed and he fell. I would like to once again repeat that her story is that he said, I could put this blindfold on, take a step and not even fall on the ledge of this 300-foot cliff when he wouldn't get on a ladder. She also said she kept thinking that he was going to fall and she was stressed. But then when he grabbed her arm,
like to steady himself,
he must have scared her. Maybe she thought he was going to do something else because her reaction wasn't, oh my God, let me help you. It was, no, I'm not going to let this happen. I'm going to fight back. And she pushed.
The lie detector determined that that was a lie.
She then took off, got her brother, and went home.
So was he complicit in this, the brother?
I don't believe so.
Okay, that's awkward afterwards.
Yeah. She denies any thoughts or planning. She says she continued to turn around and push him because she was frustrated. Oh, here's the quote. I was frustrated. I was angry. I was every emotion I could ever think of all at once. Which sounds very A24 of her.
It just seems like a fear of like the shame of it. She'd rather be a widow than...
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, you are very young. You are both happy, healthy people.
Very young.
If you are not meant to be together, probably would have been better to have discussed that beforehand. But the second best time to do that is now.
Yeah.
Before anybody gets hurt.
Yeah.
Emotion, like feelings hurt, let alone physically hurt.
Yeah, let alone unrecoverably hurt.
Ugh. And what a terrifying way to go for him.
Yep.
That having been his fear.
Yeah.
Wow.
The cops literally were like, okay, what part do you feel responsible for?
Mm-hmm.
And Jordan said the pushing and the falling. So not him dying as a result of the pushing and aforementioned falling? Make it make sense.
Can't.
Of course, this story was sketchy at best. Okay, Jordan never even ran for help. She didn't call 911. She just picked up her brother and went home. Then she went to her stepdad's, made a fake email, and then sent it to herself and brought it to the police. Like, that wasn't going to be the easiest thing to figure out. This was like 2014.
I feel like if I were that Tony guy from his work, I'd be like, what the fuck did I do to you?
Hey.
Did you just try to implicate me in a murder? What the fuck? What'd I do?
And once again, why would he climb over the ledge if he's afraid of heights And why, even not afraid of heights, go over a safety wall to see the sights when it's dark at night, up 300 feet while wearing a blindfold? Like, this shit is dumb.
He wouldn't step on a ladder. He didn't do that.
And I think what gets me is, like, you take the higher route to see the views. It's nighttime, and then he put a fucking blindfold on. Like, he's not seeing shit.
I always wanted to see this before I died. I'm just going to not look at it.
Poor man's is 0 for 2. It's not good.
It's terrible.
So Jordan gets arrested. What? And a federal judge ordered her release pre-trial, meaning she was on electronic monitoring and house arrest, and she had to get a mental health evaluation. Cody's friends and family said that they were relieved when she was charged. She was arrested and charged with second-degree murder and basically, like, lying to police or throwing off an investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But this was later upped to a first-degree murder charge. I think they actually added it on, so it was first and second, and the lying to police. They did start the trial, but after 4 days, and just before closing arguments, in case you were wondering, like, where that was, they made a plea bargain where she pled guilty to second-degree murder, but only so that they would drop the first-degree murder and lying to authorities.
Okay.
She said to the judge, "Here's the truth. I wasn't thinking of where we were. It was a reckless act. I just pushed." Jordan Graham was ultimately sentenced to just 30 years in prison.
That's it?
Although.
Well, second degree. Okay.
At least she has no chance of parole before then. But 30 years for this man's life.
She's going to be out relatively young.
Yep. After her sentencing, the judge said only one person knows what happened, and I don't think she's been entirely truthful. I don't disagree with that judge. Jordan later tried to file a motion to take back her plea a few months later, but it was denied.
You cannot do that.
Womp womp. Ultimately, I don't believe Jordan Graham's story for a minute. Parts of it, maybe. But she's lied to at least one, if not all, of the people that she's talked to about this. If she told the police that she had consistent anxieties about Cody falling, then she was lying to the judge when she said she didn't think about where they were, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame, too, because not only did we lose a man who, by all accounts, was loving and a good-hearted person, but because this kind of feels like a mix of anxiety and cowardice and a lot of potential, like, I don't want to say religious trauma, but like religious influence. And I don't mean spirituality. Like, I don't mean her faith. I don't mean her relationship with God, but sort of the way the church has brought up a lot of this. And now listen, this is not meant to be anything other than context. I've said it before and I'll say it again, but virginity is a huge deal in many different religions. I mean, hell, like, watch Jane the Virgin for one season, okay? It's pretty much all true. Just the only thing that's dramatized is, like, the choir fucking singing to her about not having sex before she's married. There's, like, this little scene where her grandma has her, like, crumple up a flower and then try to put it back the way it was. And she's like, you can't do it. And that's what happens when you lose your virginity before marriage. And,
oh,
like...
No.
I mean, I was raised in churches. They were doing this into the 2010s with middle schoolers of, like, chew the gum. Okay, do you want gum that's already chewed? No.
Ooh.
Like, there's all sorts of messaging that basically talks about how your value considerably goes down and is not restorable. You can't unchew chewed gum. You can't put back together a crushed flower. And that is what you become.
But you can annul the marriage.
And here's the thing. Yes, you can annul the marriage. You could even not get married. But if you got married and you were this afraid of that, because I have to admit, I think there has to be something in here. Like, I don't think she got any money out of this. Like, I think there has to be something in her brain that is crossed wiring or something gone wrong. And I don't think that the sentiment of saving yourself for someone you're serious about and care about. And for a lot of people, that means marriage. For a lot of people, that means a relationship, whatever that is for you. I don't think that's wrong. But I also don't think it makes you unlovable to have partaken in sex in that way. And I think that it makes complete sense to me that if maybe I had some self-esteem concerns, if I knew, if I did nothing else right, that I did this right, that I was a virgin until the man I was married to. And then I had doubts about that marriage and was like, ooh, well, I can't be a divorcee who's had sex. Like, that's two strikes. I could see where that puts you in a spot, but the answer to that is not murdering your husband.
And no,
not for nothing. But thou shall not murder is in the New Testament too. That one's in both of them.
Well, and that's the thing that, like, I think there's a lot of reasons why people, you know, don't want to get divorced. I mean, even take the religious piece out of it. She could have come from a family where every single relationship had ended in divorce and she was determined to not be that way, or nobody had gotten divorced in the family before and she didn't want to be the one to start that. Even if it's, take the religious context out of it, I think adding it back in adds an important layer. But I think that, like, if it's forgiveness and it's all of these things, and also, like, the, you guys dated, you planned a wedding in 6 months and you were immediately, like, you blinked and you were married. Like, you haven't brought children into this yet. You haven't, you've hardly done anything. I'm pretty sure you haven't lived together before this. So, like, there's not even moving stuff. It's just a trip to town hall. Like, there are things that are reversible, especially in a short time frame. Like, there's no reason, there's a reason it's an annulment, not a divorce. Like, there's a, there's a difference there. And I think that, like, I hear what you're saying about the, like, the value of how, like, that is something that you cannot get back. But she also did what I guess supposedly was required of her, to be married first. And that was done. So if that marriage does not last, well, I mean, didn't you still hold up your end? Like, I don't know.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. Like, I feel like, regardless, not
that it should matter. Like, I mean, but I say that, like, it,
I want to,
it can matter. That can be a part of it, but it shouldn't be to your detriment in this way.
It matters, but it is not worth a life. It is not something that you can't come back from. You know what I mean? Even in the strictest of Christian religions, if you believe in the New Testament, you believe that your sins are forgiven. If you ask, if you do the things you're supposed to do and foster that relationship, that's what you believe. And if you have gone through your whole life and you think that these boxes and checking them are going to be what makes you okay, I guess I could see a world where thinking, if I have sex with him and then we get divorced, no one's going to want me because I'm divorced and not pure.
But that is a self-esteem and security issue.
That is an issue.
An immaturity.
To talk to your fucking therapist. And it's hard, but be vulnerable and talk to your partner. If you, in any other way, lest, and I'm going to say ideally, because I'd like to give some benefit of the doubt, maybe every other way, she thought he was the perfect partner for her. If that's who you think you're talking to and about, you should be able to say, I'm freaking the fuck out.
Yeah, and then you're allowed to also take some time and see where that goes, and maybe do counseling, or counseling through your church, or counseling through an outside entity, or
both.
Yeah, or all of it, or whatever. I don't know. Just, there were so many options other than this, and I can understand maybe some added pressure, but added pressure does not excuse murder.
No.
So,
and once again, in the eyes of the Bible, she would have done everything right if she waited and had one divorce where two people lived,
but she
and
just,
had learned.
She just committed the ultimate sin.
But
so
she
what do you...
instead decided to end the man's life, which is awful, because if she cared about him enough to get married to him, even if she wasn't like, okay, take all of the religious context out of it. Even if it was just that she liked him in every other way, but sexually, like she wasn't sexually attracted to him or something. Like, that's so fucking easy to not murder someone over. He could have been happy and had a life that just wasn't with you.
It also, add the religious stuff back in, though. If she's so concerned about, like, a sin or whatever that is, then you just committed the ultimate one. So
yep.
What you were planning on doing was saying, I don't care what God thinks of me. I care what these people think of me.
Yeah.
So, like, you don't, this is not, like, for religious. This is for your reputation. Ego. And, yeah, your standing and your, like, well, I don't want a mark against me. Like, for whatever right. reason you assign, we'll give you a mark against you. And I still need to appear this way. And I can't risk that. And maybe I'll get sympathy if it's done this way. So to me, it's like, take God out of it, because she obviously didn't care about that.
No.
It's about the perceptions of her.
And ultimately, I feel for everybody in this case, pretty much except for Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
And I try. Listen, we just spent some time telling you how I am trying to find places to feel for her.
I know.
I'm not devoid of humanity. I just believe if you devoid the world of someone else's humanity, that there is something very seriously wrong to look at.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. It's hard, but you have to be vulnerable with the people that are there for you. And if it wasn't for this, if she had decided that just this wasn't it, let's call it off. Fuck it. The morning of the wedding. Not even the night of, just don't sign the fucking marriage certificate if you want to go that far.
Yep.
You know what I mean? All you have to do is call it off, and he would be upset. And people might be sad. And yeah, you might have to send some of the fucking gifts back. Okay.
And that is the extent of it.
But Cody would be alive, and his mom, Sherry, wouldn't have had to mourn her only son. She would have gotten to be a grandma, which is something she was so excited for. And Cody would have gotten to be a dad, which is something that he was so excited for. It just would have had someone else's DNA in it mixed in. And not for nothing, I know that there are a lot of people that hold near and dear all of the rules of the Old Testament, and I respect that. But do not murder was mentioned in the Old and New Testament.
So, mic drop.
That's a double whammy, babe.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Ultimately, I want to remind you all that we are a free to be you and me kind of space here at ATFTC. Believe what you want to believe, engage in what you'd like to, as long as everyone involved has informed consent and is excitedly and enthusiastically saying yes. Whether that's in a monogamous, faith-based relationship, or who knows, dancing naked with a coven in the moonlight, you know? If you're responsible, consenting, and kind to other people, do it up. I hope with the 3 decades that Jordan will have behind bars, she uses that long time to reflect and starts to identify the areas where maybe she can grow, you know? And hopefully, she has all the time she needs to work it out. She still has another 20 years to go. So, before we end today, I just want to again remember the man lost from this chaos, because a woman couldn't risk a reputation or have a vulnerable conversation. Cody Johnson was a loving son, friend, and for the entire week he was a husband, he was a devoted and loving husband.
Mm.
Cody was goofy and silly. He was compassionate and kind. Cody worked hard, loved harder, and was always there for the people that he cared about. I wanted to end with a quote from a friend featured in that Truly Criminal episode I watched. Cody's friend said, "He did so much for everybody. I just didn't realize how much he did for me until he was gone."
Hmm.
I'm sending peace and love to Cody's family, friends, and community. But friends, that was the horrifying and incredibly needless death of Cody Johnson.
See, these are just the ones we've talked about the last couple episodes are just so... Let me rewind. They're all needless. They're mm-hmm. all senseless. They're all brutal. However, there are some situations where, though I obviously do not condone or agree with decisions made, I can see how you got from A to B, from B to C, from C to D, and onward.
Right.
I can understand mounting debt and a cheating spouse and all of this, where you lash out and in a rage push them and they fall back, hit their head, and it was in the right spot, in the right way, and now you're like, shit, what do I do?
Right.
And you try to cover it up or whatever. Like, do I agree with those actions and, you know, putting your hands on somebody or causing that chain reaction? No. Was that likely your intent? Or no. Was that, you know, not without other stressors? No. So, like, situations like that where I can see how that happens. I can follow the logic and see that in a heightened state that things can happen. But in this situation, this is just like she's worried about what people will think of her, and somebody's life should never be worth, like, the fact that those were on an even playing field just shows how not ready to marry somebody she was.
She said, my reputation and your living are equal.
And to lure him, it seems like, up a steep embankment, and perhaps she did this as like, well, he always wanted to see it. Either that was the way that she lured him there, or that was like maybe she thought it would be a comfort to die there because he liked it and wanted to see it. But like, you cannot convince me that she gave a shit, because he could have, if it were innocent and he fell,
mm-hmm.
then she would have made a call immediately.
Yep.
Her next move wouldn't have been to go make a fake email address.
It was to call 911.
Like, it would have been like, oh my God, there's some way we could probably help him. What if he can still be helped?
Right.
What if he suffered? What if he were alive for hours? You know, now is it likely? I don't know. I don't think so.
I doubt that a very sharp and steep 300-foot fall would result in that, but it could, and we will never know.
Like, I don't know that that's possible, but like, perhaps he hit something that like cradled his fall a little bit before mm-hmm. he hit the bottom. There's a lot of things I think that are what ifs, that it, you know, after sunset and it's dark out, she wouldn't have been able to know that.
Right.
And that warranted a call. And then the fake story with the going off with friends that can't be proven and the email and everything.
Yeah, like, I love that she said it was a guy from Washington. And then that didn't work out. And then conveniently she got an email the next day from Carman Tony. That was like, yeah, he's dead. Don't bother looking. And she's like, guess he's dead. You know what I mean? Like, I don't get it. And I don't believe for a second that we know the true story of what happened.
No. And I think that if you're going to take vows and you take your relationship with the people around you so seriously, or at least what you look like,
mm-hmm.
then don't make yourself look like a fool and take vows before your loved ones and before God, and, you know, make a promise you don't intend to keep or you don't know that you're willing to. And that is a real shame. And if that's done, then there are legal proceedings where that can be relatively painless. It's not like you've got property together. It's not like you've got children. It's not like you've got shared assets. It is quite literally a week old marriage.
Yep.
You could wrap that up.
I'm sure it's longer than some, but certainly shorter than many celebrity marriages.
It's shorter than Kim Kardashian's shortest marriage. She had her beat by like weeks.
Yeah. That's so, multiple Mondays.
Several. So come on now.
So ultimately, this case sucked. It is pointless. It's needless. Cody seemed like a stand-up guy. I think he was pretty cute. Like, if you look him up, he just looks like he's got so much love and so much life in his eyes. He's got a great smile, too. But just so sad that someone who didn't want the same things couldn't just come to terms and say, I don't want this, before deciding to end his life to get out of it.
Absolutely needless.
So, back to the beginning of the episode. This is the first case that we've covered where I feel like someone dramatically fell from a cliff to their death in a cinematic way.
Oh, and it was real.
And this is also why I say appropriately themed, not appropriately matched.
Yeah.
In many ways. We are so incredibly excited for our newlywed, and that by the time you're hearing this, we've made it certainly past 8 days.
Woo!
Yeah, so we're very excited, and we are excited that that is not the outcome that we're facing today in real life for us. But we are horrified and deeply saddened that it was the reality for Cody.
Absolutely. I hope that his mom can have some kind of peace.
Yeah.
And whatever that looks like. And I'm blown away that Jordan will be out probably in her, what, mid-50s? Still a lot of life to live. So
a lot of life to live.
At this point, it's already in stone. Just hope the time that she does have out, she does good things with it.
I hope the time she has in, she does the work so that by the time she's out, she's doing good things.
I agree.
But that's what I had for you today. If you wanted to see the people, the places, the things, if you wanted to see Glacier National Park and its beauty and not the devastating crime scene, you can do that at our Instagram. You'll also obviously be able to see Cody and Jordan, and anything we're talking about here is there plus some, you know? You can find that at About Time for True Crime Pod with periods in between every word. So that is ABOUT period, TIME period, FOR period, TRUE period, CRIME period, POD, because podcast was too long. But if you, like podcast, wanted to send us something too long, maybe you wanted to send us a pod pet, a case recommendation, something you loved from this week that you think we might love from this week. Or even like, I don't know, a Starbucks gift card. Your girl's just sleepy. Sorry. But you could do that to our email. Allie, where would they email that?
If you wanted to send us an email, you could do that to abouttime4tc@gmail.com. So that's abouttime4tc@gmail.com.
And if all of that was gibberish, just look below, babe. It's all in the link tree.
Mm-hmm. All there for you. Just click it.
But if I look at my watch while you look at that, I think that that was
About Time for True Crime.
Bye.
Bye.